from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1991 in Ithaca. Liz Walker co-founded Eco Village. The goal was for the Eco Village to become part of the movement of people seeking solutions to social injustice, environmental problems, climate change, economic inequality, and more. Eco Village Ithaca aims to address human needs for shelter, food, energy, livelihood, even social connectedness. There are community meals, and that might seem like a strange concept in a world where most neighbors do not know the name of the person who lives three houses or three doors down. Well, now Rochester appears set to have its first co-housing community called Flower City Co-Housing. This hour, we're going to talk about what co-housing is, what the Eco Village is, how all of this works, and why the people behind Flower City Co-Housing are hoping it grows. They've got an event coming up this weekend. Let me go ahead and introduce our panel. First in studio is Jane Ellen Bleeg. Jane, nice to see you.
Thank you.
Also here is Kathy Albertini. Kathy, nice to see you.
Thank you.
Tony Toscano is also in studio with us from Flower City Co-Housing. Tony, nice to see you.
Hi, Evan.
And on the phone with us from Ithaca, Liz Walker, the co-founder of Eco Village Ithaca. Liz, thank you for taking the time for us.
Oh, it's great to be on your show.
Liz is coming to Rochester on Sunday, 2 to 4 p.m. for an event called Co-Housing in Rochester, Creating a New Urban Community. And I want to start with Jane with just the question of what co-housing is, how you define what co-housing is.
Co-housing is a wonderful combination of each household having their own distinct living unit. It can be anything from an apartment to a duplex, a standalone house, has their own kitchen, living room, etc. But at the same time, it's clustered with a group of housing units that form essentially a small village, and they have a common house, which has a large kitchen, a large dining room, meeting space, rec space, child space, equipment, arts. And so you function sort of like an old-time community village, and you all interact frequently. You might share some meals during the week. So it's the best of both worlds. You have your own individuality as a family unit or as an individual. You can close your door anytime and have your privacy, but then you have a caring community that you live within.
Okay, and so that's the definition of what a co-housing community is. But Liz Walker, Eco Village is sort of more than that. I think there are three co-housing communities or centers within Eco Village.
That's right. We have developed over time three different co-housing communities, and we're just completing our third one. It should be completed in a few months, and then we'll have 100 homes here at the Eco Village. We also have 175 acres of land, and we have set aside 90% of it as open space. So the co-housing communities, as Jane said, each co-housing community is almost like a little neighborhood of its own. And in this case, we have three of those neighborhoods, which create a village. We also do a lot of educational work with students. We're connected with Cornell University and Ithaca College, and we enjoy having groups of visitors come and check out our different lifestyle, which is really trying to use fewer resources and have less of an impact on the planet.
Well, take me through that a little bit, Liz. And I've got a number of questions about how it works. How many people live at Eco Village?
We have approximately 225 people, and so about a third of those are children. And we range in age from our youngest was just born at home several months ago, and our oldest now is 85 years old. So it's quite multi-generational. And we include people who are working on site as farmers, as computer software developers, as therapists, as writers, as music teachers, And then we have a lot of residents who also commute to jobs in nearby Ithaca or some other cities.
Well, that answers Paula's question. Paula wrote to us online and wanted to know if the purpose of a co-housing community is to essentially secede from society. And I'm sure you get all kinds of questions like that. Let's lead off with that, Liz. Paula wants to know if the purpose of Eco Village was to secede.
Not at all. We see ourselves very much as integrated with the larger community here. From the very beginning, we chose not to become self-sufficient. That is not our goal. We see ourselves as supplying some resources. For instance, we have 3 organic farms on site, so we produce more vegetables and fruits than we actually eat here. And we have community-supported agriculture, which helps to feed some of our neighbors. But then on the other hand, we have to buy some other resources, including some of the electricity that we use. We produce a lot of it on site through solar panels, but we also are dependent on the larger community here.
So take us through, as you said, kind of the lifestyle is different in a co-housing community and particularly at Eco Village Ithaca. Take us through, for you, what is a day and what is a week like?
Sure. Well, one of the things I love about living here is that there's always something interesting going on. So especially in the summer, I enjoy going down to one of our local farms and maybe helping with some of the harvesting for the farmers market or for the CSA. There are social activities going on. I'm on the cook team. Jane mentioned that in co-housing, people frequently eat meals together. So in our community of 100 households, we eat 3 meals a week together. And then there's also a potluck for people who can't get enough of of enjoying breaking bread together. So as someone on the cook team, for instance, tonight I'm making a lasagna dinner for 50 people. And I'll have 3 of my friends will be helping me out, chopping veggies and getting the tomato sauce ready. So it's a joint effort. It's one of the things that is very attractive about co-housing is that people live in close proximity with each other, and they do a lot of shared work together. We actually ask everybody in the community to contribute a couple hours a week of their time for the good of the whole community. So for me, that means enjoying cooking these community dinners a couple times a month. For my husband, that means being on the maintenance team and troubleshooting when something goes wrong. For other people, it might be washing dishes or being on the finance team. When I walk down the street from my house to what we call the common house or community center, where we have our community meals, I will often stop and talk to neighbors along the way, and I really enjoy this time of year because it's spring and the flowers are just starting to come out, and so lots of my neighbors are really enjoy gardening, and I love seeing the flowers coming up in each of their yards. So it's a very social kind of environment, but you can also have a lot of privacy too.
Talking to Liz Walker, who is the co-founder of Eco Village Ithaca, back in 1991, have you had to kick anybody out, Liz?
No, but you know, there are some people who don't really enjoy living in this kind of environment, and that's fine, you know, each to their own. So we have had a number of people who have left. Some people have tried it out and then said, this is really not for me. It's there's too much going on. I want more quietness or more privacy. There are other people who I would say if you're not somebody who can talk things through. If you have a conflict with your neighbor, then this kind of place is going to be very hard, because as human beings, conflicts come up. That's something that we recognize in co-housing, and it's not, this is not any kind of utopian way of living. These are real people with real lives and sometimes different priorities. So you have to learn how to work with conflict, and that means learning good communication skills, being willing to sit down with somebody that may have bugged you and talking things through. So it means, in some cases, learning some new skills and being patient. And what we find is that when people are willing to be realistic and you know, not expect perfection, and willing to work with their neighbors and play with their neighbors and enjoy their neighbors on all kinds of different fronts, then things usually work out very well. And often people become very close friends. So I've lived here from the very beginning. Our first buildings were completed in 1996. And there are people here who are, I essentially consider, lifelong friends. It's like being part of an extended family, as Jane mentioned.
In a moment, we're going to compare some of the similarities and some of the differences between what is happening in Ithaca and what has happened there, and what the crew from co-housing, the Flower City co-housing project, wants to happen. They're going to try to roll that out by 2017, I believe. And again, if you're just joining us this Sunday, you're going to learn a lot more about what co-housing is, how it works, and get your questions answered. Liz Walker is going to be speaking from 2 to 3 on Sunday afternoon, and then from 3 to 4, Flower City Co-Housing is hosting a panel presentation. It's happening at Asbury First United Methodist Church Sunday afternoon. They'd appreciate it if you can register in advance for that, because they certainly expect some interest and a lot of questions, the kind of which I have. And Liz, you're so patient with my ignorance, and that's part of the process, I'm sure. But when you started more than 20 years ago, and especially when your co-housing community started about 20 years ago, the landscape of co-housing communities in this country was different. It just wasn't as growing and vibrant as we see it now. What do you see the difference 20 years ago to now in terms of how many co-housing communities we see across the country?
Well, it's a huge difference, Evan, because when we started this project in Ithaca, none of us had ever seen a co-housing community. There were only two or three that were completed in the whole country at that time. The idea had essentially just been imported from Denmark by a couple of architects, Catherine McKenna and Charles Durrett. And so the concept was brand new. People were kind of wary of it on, you know, municipal boards and planning groups were kind of worried that this was a new form of commune or something. And over the years, co-housing has spread and become much more popular. Currently, we have about 135 co-housing communities that are built and lived in around the United States in 36 different states. And then there's another 90 to 100 that are in some process of being planned or built. So it's a totally different thing now, because there's so many examples. If you want urban co-housing, such as Flower City Co-Housing is planning a downtown community, there are lots of examples to look at around the country and see how they've worked out. Likewise, there are rural examples, and our community here in Ithaca is actually right on the edge of the city, so it's in the town of Ithaca. It's really a suburban example.
And Liz, best I can tell in kind of looking up co-housing communities around the country, there are, at least from what I'm seeing, there seem to be relatively uniform housing sizes. For example, I'm reading Stillwater, Oklahoma, the Oak Creek community there. They have a co-housing community with anywhere from 702 square feet to 1,190 square feet private homes. That's the size. Mm-hmm. What about in Eco Village Ithaca? What about the co-housing communities there? How big are the residences?
Well, they vary tremendously, but in our third neighborhood, we actually have some studio apartments that are 425 square feet, so really quite small. You wouldn't want more than one person living in them, probably. And they range up to 1,650 square feet, which is a 3-4-bedroom home, depending how you configure it. And so we also, in our second neighborhood, some people chose to build larger homes. There, we have homes that are between 600 square feet and 2,400 square feet. So those are, the 2,400 square feet homes are actually so big that many people have converted a portion of their home into a B&B or into a home business of some sort, or occasionally they've rented out an apartment. The reason I say that is that typically in co-housing, people find that they can live in smaller than usual spaces because they're also sharing so much. They're sharing outdoor courtyard space. They're sharing common house space. And people don't just live in their own homes. They live in this village-like setting, so they don't need as much personal private space as the typical American home.
Before I get to the phones, and if anyone wants to call in with questions for what's going on in Ithaca, the second half hour we're going to really focus in on what Flower City Co-Housing is going to be doing. You can call the program. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. But Liz, I have to hit a question that I've already seen online come in, which is, how do you apply? How do you get into this kind of a community?
Well, basically, we ask people to come to our website. We have a planned method for people to join us. There is a visitor coordinator who helps people come for a tour, for a visit. We strongly encourage people to actually come and visit for at least 5 days. It doesn't have to be consecutive days, but we want people to know who we are and what we're doing and what the values are behind this project before they decide whether or not this lifestyle is for them. If it is for them, it often becomes very clear. They just they get very excited, and in fact, sometimes we have families with children who travel a long distance to get here, and they spend time, and the kids play with other kids around here, and then it's the children on the way home who say, "Can't we just move there?"
And Liz, Jeff writes to the program and says, "Can you be too poor to be accepted into a co-housing community?"
Well, we have people from many different income levels here. I would say by far the most people are middle class. We have some upper middle class, and we have a number of people on fixed incomes. Typically, people buy homes to live here, and you go to the bank and get a mortgage just like you would anywhere else. So people have to be able to afford a home.
Mm-hmm. And what's a home cost?
It varies from our smallest units are going for about $90,000. Our largest, fanciest units are probably about $275,000, and that's all-inclusive. So that's a home and then a share in the whole neighborhood and common house and the wood shop and the pond and all of those kinds of extra amenities that you get when you put people's resources together and share a lot of things.
All right, let me grab. Go ahead, Liz. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was also going to say we do have a system where people rent out rooms in their home sometimes. So that's an inexpensive way for students, for some single parents, to join in on this kind of community. And also, there are occasionally whole houses for rent.
Let me grab a phone call. Dan in Albion has a question or a comment. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, hi. I am a former resident, I guess, or I guess we technically were full members of a community in Missouri called Eastwind Community. And Eastwind Community is not exactly an East Eco Village or even really a co-housing development. It's a commune, and there are differences. But I'm curious, I was mainly curious about the Flower City project because I met my wife there, and we live here in the Rochester area now. And we've always told ourselves that, you know, we're going to live communally again someday. But, like, we looked into the Eco Village at Ithaca a couple of times, honestly, and really found that to be out of reach for us. I mean, there's a fair distinction in cost. I mean, you know, and don't get me wrong, I mean, Eastwind is in some ways, I mean, it's obviously much different, but it didn't cost me anything to move there and live there. And my contribution to that society was my labor, ultimately. But how is Flower City going to be structured in terms of membership or participation and residency? Is this going to be something I have to buy into, or will I be able to work my way into it? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Dan, thank you for the call. Let me ask our guests in studio to tackle that.
Well, one of the first things that I would like to say is that we haven't made all the decisions. So we are in the process of making decisions, and this would be a perfect time for everybody to join those people who are interested, because they can be part of the decision-making process. In terms of somebody buying into, I mean, trading in work for a place to stay, we haven't even discussed that yet. It hasn't come up as an issue. We will take that question at the presentation on the 19th and toss it around and find out what the feelings of the groups are. But essentially, the group makes a decision based on consensus. So we all come together, we all discuss the issues, the plans, the what it is that needs to be decided, and we move along that way. It's a hard process. It's a slow process at times, but it works.
You're hearing from Tony Toscano. Kathy Albertini and Jane Ellen Bleagle are also here from Flower City Co-Housing. And Jane, go ahead.
Yeah, let me add to that. I know there are a couple of intentional communities locally that allow folks to come in and to rent. Most of the residents are renters rather than owners. And that's one way to get involved in a very, very low-cost communal living situation. Ant Hill Community and Little Flower Community. Our community is going to be fully a co-housing community, which is a little bit different. And so far, we've talked about primarily owner-occupied units. And so to be an owner, you have to have the money to be able to pay for your own unit. Within that, there may be owners that are interested in renting one of their rooms or something like that. We also envision trying to partner with one of the local development groups with the idea of possibly building some affordable units near our unit, because we would love to have a broader, very diverse community involved. But unless someone wants to just hand us the money to build the community, we each are going to have to come up with it ourselves.
Okay. You're hearing from some of the people behind Flower City Co-Housing, which is in Rochester, a new urban community. And urban's an important distinction here. We've been hearing about what's going on at Eco Village in Ithaca, but it's a different sort of a landscape. I mean, how does it differ in Rochester? Where will Flower City Co-Housing be? How big? Can you guys kind of help us envision it? And we'll go around the panel here.
We're thinking of being in the city. So that would be dramatically different than where Eco Village is. And we're thinking of sizes like 1 or 2 acres to place our community in, obviously very much smaller than Eco Village. So that means we'll be an urban community. We want green space from the point of view of the way the community looks and how it feels. And we want to be close, as everyone has described the advantage. We will have a couple of renderings at our presentation on Sunday that are giving us some ideas of how we can do that.
Okay. And go ahead.
I would also add, our community has decided for sure that we do not want to be a high-rise. There are urban communities that are all in one high-rise mm-hmm. building, and we have just said that's not part of our vision. So what we're envisioning is maybe one building that's a maximum of 3 stories tall, that has the common house on the bottom and apartments on the second and third floors, and that then also has some duplexes and some standalone homes. We envision some recreation space for children, ideally an outdoor gathering space for the community. If we're on the 2-acre size, we'll have a little more room for a little larger green space, maybe some gardens. If we're closer to 1 acre, less green space.
We've heard from Liz Walker about why in the 1990s she wanted to create this kind of a community in Ithaca. Let me ask the people in this room, because everyone will have probably a bit of a different answer for this, but Tony, for example, Tony Toscano's here. I've read that for you, a co-housing community might be reminiscent of childhood in Italy. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. Being born in a small village where everybody knew each other and growing up there was like a safety net for me. I remember as a young boy, I always did not the right things most of the times. And everybody was watching over us. And you know, they would come over and say, if you do that, I'll tell your father. So it was that kind of a policing that was going on. But later in years now, what we're looking for is being able to share, to be with friends, to cook together, to have hobbies together. Maybe do the gardening together. I'm a winemaker, so we'll probably make wine together. So it's bringing back all these communal activities and, you know, living together, really.
Jane, what about you?
Well, in my 30s, I was part of a Zen community in Minnesota. And we didn't all live together in one building. We shared houses. Some lived separately. Some lived together in houses and apartments within about a half mile of the Zen Center. And it was an informal community. And we just were there for each other. We really cared about each other. We shared some holidays together. You know, if you didn't have anywhere to go on Thanksgiving with your own family, then you were there with the others of the Zen community who also weren't going away. And I lived in a couple of homes with single parents and, you know, did some things with the kids. If somebody was older, needed help, was sick, if somebody had mental health issues, they got support from the community. And I love that way of living. And my husband and I create a little bit of that wherever we live in, you know, the city neighborhoods that we live. But I've had my eye on co-housing for about 20 years because it feels like it recreates that small village feeling.
Kathy?
Yeah, for me, I've spent a lot of my life moving. I've lived all over the country. Actually, Rochester's the longest place I've ever lived in my life. And every time I go on vacation, I end up in a city. And I would like to be part of what is rejuvenating downtown Rochester. I would like to live there, to be in the same kind of community that Tony and Jane have described as the benefits to us, but also being part of what's happening in Rochester and how Rochester is changing and bringing a new model into the picture.
If you've got questions, it's 844-295-TALK. Pat in Rochester. Go ahead, Pat.
Hi, Evan. This is Pat.
Yeah.
Back in the 1990s, there was actually a co-housing community, the start of one in the city of Rochester, and I was a part of it. And what we did was we tried to retrofit co-housing into an existing urban community, and the area was around the Caroline Benton Street area of the South Wedge. And our goal back then was to actually have a few families, and actually 3 families bought into it, start to buy houses, and then over time more people would come and buy houses as they become available, and it would actually increase the value of the neighborhood. There was one house that would be purchased in common, and that would be the common house for common meals, entertainment, social activities. And it was a way to preserve what was already there in a neighborhood that is well-respected and has great history and character and housing, but to create intentional community through a co-housing model. And I know that creating a new community is a lot easier in terms of, you know, having a plot of land and building fresh in terms of design and that sort of thing. But I was just curious, with some of the history there has been with co-housing, like the community I was part of, was there any consideration given to retrofitting into an existing neighborhood?
I can address that. I know that Little Flower Community up on Parcells, that is exactly the model that they're using, with the difference that I think only two people have ownership of, I think it's five units, and most of the people in the community are renters within those spaces, and many people share a house. But they are working on that model. I think for us, we would rather do the start with the community in place and not run the risks of what you can get and what you can't get and what might or might not become available. We've also discovered that retrofitting can be as expensive and sometimes even more expensive than starting fresh. And so I think what we're looking at, now we understand that we may end up with a site that has some building or buildings on it, and so there may be a partial retrofit and then also some new build with it.
Did that answer your question, Pat?
Yep, it was perfect. Thanks very much, and good luck to you.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Pat. I appreciate that. We're late for a break, and then we're going to come back with Liz Walker, the co-founder of Eco Village Ithaca. Tony Toscano, Kathy Albertini, and Jane Ellen Bleeg are all here from Flower City Co-Housing. That's a community that they'd like to see open in 2017, if all goes well. Right, Jane?
Yes.
And they've got an event coming up on Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Asbury First United Methodist Church. Liz is going to be there talking about the work that's been going on down there at Eco Village Ithaca. And then from 3 to 4, Flower City Co-Housing is hosting a panel discussion and presenting on this. Again, you'll see some renderings, some ideas of what it might look like. So let's go ahead and grab a quick break and come right back. More of your phone calls and questions about co-housing. I'm Evan Dawson. On the next Connections, it's Healthy Friday. We'll talk to professors and researchers about public health, tobacco policy, the person-centered care movement, and forensic interviews for refugee victims of torture. Then in our second hour, we're talking state budget. Researchers are worried about their ability to recruit and retain new talent. We'll also talk mental health and alternative treatment. It's all Friday, Healthy Friday on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Heart Hearing Centers, providing hearing care for adults and children for more than 40 years. Audiology services include hearing and tinnitus evaluations, rehabilitation, and devices to accommodate lifestyle needs. Details at harthearing.com.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I should mention that for the event on Sunday, 2 to 4 at Asbury First United Methodist Church, co-housing in Rochester, creating a new urban community. They'd appreciate it if you could register in advance. You can do that at rochestercohousing.org. That's their website, rochestercohousing.org. You can email info@rochestercohousing.org. Or if you can't attend on Sunday and you've just got basic questions, info@rochestercohousing.org. Before we get back to the phones, I want to hit a couple of variations of this question or comment have come in online. Bart writes to us, "It sounds like your guests are describing communes, classic communism." And Jane, you're already shaking your head. Let me start with Liz on that, and then we'll kind of come around here. Bart wants to know if these are just classic communes or communism. Liz.
I would say not at all. These are a really wonderful way of living that combines private ownership of homes with some elements held in common, such as a community center or common house. So there's no shared income here. There's no, it really is quite different than a commune. And yet there, I think that most human beings long for a sense of connection with each other. So co-housing strikes this amazing balance between individual privacy within your own nuclear family, or if you're a single person, you know, having your own space on the one hand, and on the other hand, having a very easy connection to others. So I think that balance point is little different set point than what most of us experience in a regular neighborhood where people don't know each other.
Liz, remind our listeners again, you live in a co-housing community with how many people, and how many would you say you know by name, at least, if you were to see them?
There are 225 people here. Some of them have just moved in, and I have to admit, I don't know their names yet. I would say out of those 225, I probably know 220 by name, and I would say probably I would count at least 20 of them as very dear friends, and many more as people that I would enjoy hanging out with or eating a meal with or doing a work project with. So there's a way that you get to know each other very, very well over time in many different settings, whether it's making decisions together in a meeting or gardening together or cooking a meal together or hiding Easter eggs for the kids or, you know, the parties. There are multiple avenues for getting to know each other and feeling that sense of connectedness.
And by the way, Jane, you are also shaking your head to Bart's question on communism. I'm sure that's a question that comes up, but how do you answer that?
It comes up almost always with someone who doesn't know about co-housing. And I grew up in California in the 60s, so I certainly know about communes. I never lived in one. It's not a lifestyle. That's part of why I don't live in California anymore. It's not a lifestyle I choose for myself. And so just to echo what Liz said, I really love the idea that you have your own independent life to a large degree. I'm responsible for my own finances, for my own choices. The community isn't making choices for me, but it is a wonderful vehicle for being in an interdependent lifestyle where we care about and support each other.
Back to the phones. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Bonnie in Rochester. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yes, hi. I like the idea of co-housing. I also was glad that somebody called in as they had tried one here a number of years ago. The reason I'm calling, though, as the one of your guests mentioned, for the current situation, looking at downtown, I really am also interested in more diversity. Sometimes those two things don't go together because so much of the downtown has been geared toward really high-income situations. So what I'd like to say is to reach out to neighborhoods that are not in the high income level. I would suggest, like the Northeast, and some of these areas are themselves going through kind of the visioning process about what they want to do with planning. In fact, there's one scheduled to be started with the Center for Community Design coming up. And really, to touch base with these folks, you have to go to them. Without going into a lot of discussion here, there's, believe me, a big barrier between people who live downtown, people who live in the neighborhoods, and a lot of times there's hesitation. So if you're interested in really doing that, I could either call you, you could tell me what to do, and there are groups in these neighborhoods that, even if they don't come into this right away, it would be great to lay early foundation with them. So, because most of the people in these areas don't know what this is, of course, but I think especially for a lot of cultures, we're talking about a value family kind of style living. In other words, kind of what you're talking about, the community. Many people from Hispanic folks and African American folks come from those cultures. So they would, it's probably new to them, this particular description, but they would have some cultural connection to that. And it would be a nice way to, pursue that with them early on. But as I said, you have to go to them.
Bonnie, could you send an email to us at info at...
Just let me get a pen.
I'll say it again for our listeners as Bonnie grabs her pen. If you want to ask questions or get in touch with the folks from Flower City Co-Housing, you can do that by going to their website. It's rochestercohousing.org, and their email is info@rochestercohousing.org. info@rochestercohousing.org. That way you can register for their event on Sunday if you want to go out and hear more from Liz Walker and from the folks at Flower City Cohousing, or you can email and get in touch. So info@rochestercohousing.org. Yeah. Got it, Bonnie?
Yeah, is that what she... Okay, she was going to say the same thing.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Bonnie. And just any brief reactions before we get to some other listener comments and questions on Bonnie's comments, or Tony?
Again, I want to say that we haven't made any final decisions, that we have worked on a structure, a governance structure, so we can make decisions. This is a time for people to join us and to help us make the future.
Get an email from Josh. Josh says, part of me thinks this sounds great. Part of me thinks it sounds like a cult. And, you know, so again, I think some people have a hard time wrapping their heads around the co-housing idea. Liz Walker, Josh thinks part of him sounds like this is right up his alley. You know, you're meeting your neighbors. You're getting to know them. You're sort of looking out for each other. And part of him thinks it sounds a little off to him for some reason. How would you describe the living experience?
Well, I think I would reassure Josh that, you know, we're all just regular American people. We're trying to find a way of living that is practical and that makes sense and that balances our own private lives with a stronger sense of community. Here at EcoVillage at Ithaca, we don't have any central tenant of... You know, there's no central religious or political affiliation. We have people from many different spiritual traditions, many different demographics, and it. So we're coming together from a lot of different viewpoints, and the commonly held vision here is to live closer to nature and using fewer resources and yet having a very rich, high quality of life together, creating a strong sense of community. So as I said before, it's not for everybody. Not everybody wants to know their neighbors. Not everybody wants to be friendly with a lot of different people. But some of us crave that, and so it's really for people who are interested in that kind of lifestyle. I would say, you know, typically if you think of a cult, what it involves is somebody who is a hierarchical leader who has all the power and all the money and is able to make decisions for the entire cult. And in a co-housing community, it's exactly the opposite. Tony has mentioned a number of times the idea of a decision-making structure which uses consensus decision-making. And what that means is that everybody has a voice. It's like super democracy. It's not even voting. It's like it's not even super majority voting, which would probably be far more efficient. But consensus involves listening to everybody's viewpoint and figuring out how to create a decision that serves the greater good. So it's almost exactly the opposite of what I would consider a cult.
And Tony wanted to weigh in as well. Go ahead, Tony.
I just want to say a little bit about what we are instead of saying what we are not.
Yes.
In our mission, we say that we will share resources. We'll share snow blowers, cars, food, whatever. So we don't. Each family does not have to have one of these tools. We'll just share everything. So there are economies there that come into play. That we will cooperate with one another and collaborate. We can have, like I said, shared meals, gardens, etc. And we will live in a socially, environmentally responsible community.
Well, it's important you mention that, Tony, because Cole writes to the program, maybe I missed it, but is energy output part of the mission and reason for co-housing? Tony?
It is part of it. I think we're going to look into ways that we can be as green as possible within the limitations that we have, which is the expense of these technologies.
Jane?
Yeah, I would also add, in terms of the sharing, it's all voluntary. And that's also one difference between a commune or a cult or whatever. So right now, my husband and I have two cars. If we were to move into co-housing, maybe we could get down to one car that we use for whoever has the priority need, and then maybe there would be a small number of people that were able to share their cars. Or maybe our second car would be the sharing car, and other people could use it too. So it's not like you have to do anything except be reasonable and cooperate and talk when you're having problems. And then you can be as involved in the sharing part as you choose to be.
And Liz, how would you answer the question on energy output? Cole, by the way, in his email mentioned that he has heard of co-housing communities where the homes can't have driveways, that they're essentially, if you have a car, you have to park in a parking lot. The goal is not to have an automobile in front of every residence.
Part of the design of co-housing is to, in fact, take the centrality of cars and instead plan around people. So yes, co-housing typically involves parking cars on the perimeter of a neighborhood and then having a pedestrian-based walkway in the middle of the neighborhood. And it's a very important distinction because our cities, our towns are planned around the car. They're not planned for people. So what we find is that by pushing cars off to the side a little ways, the neighborhood itself draws a very different kind of energy and attention. In my neighborhood, I walk through a park-like setting to go past the 30 homes in our neighborhood and to go to the common house. Often there are young children playing in the sandbox. There are people, when the time is right, picking cherries in the middle of the neighborhood. There are picnics going on, sometimes an impromptu kids' art project. So there's a very different feeling when you have a pedestrian-based neighborhood in which you're planning human scale rather than for cars. I wanted to address the energy issue. Not all co-housing communities put a really strong emphasis on the environment, although now more and more are doing so. In our neighborhoods here at the Eco Village, because we have a strong environmental mission for our overall project, we have spent a lot of time kind of pushing the envelope on energy efficiency and on producing a lot of our own power here. So we had a doctoral student from Rutgers did his dissertation looking at our eco-village and two other eco-villages in the United States, and what he found was that we had cut our energy consumption by 63% compared to the typical American usage, and that was on ecological footprint, so that's not just heating and cooling a house and electricity use. It's also about how we use water, what kind of food we eat, the transportation we use, including air travel and everything that it takes to have a lifestyle. And so I feel really good that we've been able to push our energy and resource consumption down that low. That's for the first two neighborhoods. The student was not studying our third neighborhood, which was not yet completed at the time he did the study. But we're finding in our third neighborhood, we've been able to build homes that are incredibly energy efficient. We are using what is called passive house standard, which comes from Germany. Just as co-housing comes from Denmark, this energy efficient standard, which is considered the highest in the world, comes from Germany. And we have currently seven homes out of the 40, well, out of the 25 so far that are completed, have reached passive house standard, and that's out of only 85 that are certified passive house in the whole country. So we also have a number of homes now that are coming in at what is called net zero energy, and that means that they're actually producing as much or more energy than they use for all energy needs for the house. So that's heating, cooling, appliances, lighting, everything.
Liz, give us the term again so people can look it up on their own. You said the term passive housing?
A passive house.
A passive house.
Yeah. And there's a Passive House Institute of the U.S., P-H-I-U-S is the acronym FIUS, and that is in charge of certifying passive house.
Okay. And because we're going to run out of time, I'm going to try to squeeze one more quick question. And Anne writes to the program, what are the policies, if any, on pets and pet ownership? Liz. You have pets down there in Ithaca?
We do. We have a lot of people own dogs. We keep dogs on a leash, and pet owners have to be responsible for picking up after them. And we do have a policy on outdoor cats. We strongly discourage people having outdoor cats, so because of the predation of birds,
sure,
particularly. Birds,
so. Okay, well, see, at this point, this is where I have to say, we didn't even get through all the questions I and the listeners had. If you had questions that you could not get answered on this program, you can go out on Sunday afternoon, 2 to 4 o'clock at Asbury First United Methodist Church for co-housing in Rochester, creating a new urban community. Get your questions answered. Liz Walker is going to be there from 2 to 3, and from 3 to 4, a panel presentation with Flower City Co-Housing. You can register in advance by going to rochestercohousing.org. Jane Ellen Bleig, thank you for taking the time to be here.
Appreciate being on your show, Evan.
Kathy Albertini, thank you. Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Tony Toscano, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Grazie. And Liz Walker, thank you so much for joining us from Ithaca.
Oh, you're very welcome.
All right. Have a wonderful afternoon. We'll talk to you on Healthy Friday on Connections.